Welcome to the 100th Monkey Radio with Tom and Ramon. Well,
yay!
Hey. So we are recording this on June 29th, and Ramon and I just got back from the East SETI conference yesterday.
Yay!
And wow, what an experience over there. I want to really send out my love and gratitude to everybody that was there. What an amazing experience. I saw more people take huge steps in their personal spiritual growth that during the last week than I've ever seen anywhere in my life.
I think for me, the biggest one was some of the young kids.
Oh, all the young kids, when we say young kids, we're talking about, 20.
12. Stuff, No, I'm talking about
really young
Jesse's,
that were just
Jesse's daughter.
Jesse, your daughter, Hunter. Oh, my word, Hunter, if you are listening to this, you are such a jewel. You will do much in this world. That's what I see for you. So, and Jesse, I know you'll be listening. I love you guys. So, anyways, we had such a great time over there. All the speakers were fantastic. And we will be getting the only ones we missed before now for the show is Neil Kramer and Sifu Jenny Lam. Isn't that right, Ramon?
Yeah, Sifu Jenny Lam.
We're gonna have to get Brooke back on too, I think. And Mel. We didn't have Mel, but we've got all of those all lined up for the very new for the show. So stay tuned and be prepared for that. There should all be really good shows. So.
Yeah, I just want to tell a quick story of an experience we had there before we introduce our guests. Me, Tom, and Jesse were sitting down, and we were doing the parking. So cars were coming in and coming out, just making sure that they had their tags and blah, blah, blah. And we started to talk about a researcher, and I won't mention the name, but it wasn't – we were talking about him in not in a very positive way because we weren't really agreeing with his methods. Let's just put it that way. And a butterfly came in and circled my head and circled Tom's head and Jesse's head. And our thought of what we were talking about was completely gone. And that's when all three of us noticed, oh, we shouldn't be so judgmental. So I don't know if it was nature or being or something, but that butterfly put us in check.
That was so amazing. As soon as that thing flew off, all of us were just like, we completely lost our train of thought on what we were talking about. And I was taken back by that one.
Yeah, it was, what would you say? It was a blue and black butterfly? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something like that.
And yes.
It just fluttered around all of our heads and off into the trees it went. And poof, line of thought was gone. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So for the website, we've got some changes that Ramon and I have been talking about doing here coming up in the near future. So as we get that all figured out and formed up, look for that. Ramon and I want to get out and kind of take the show on the road and go to these places and go to these people.
We just don't want to be armchair researchers.
Yeah, be able to bring more experiential information to you, our own experiences in these different places around the world. And I think it's a really exciting idea, and I think would be a really exciting process to go through. And to be able to share with everybody listening to the show what we personally experience in these places. So look forward to something here coming up in the near future. And we'll see if the universe gives us the big green light to go for it and make it happen.
Yeah. Also, we have t-shirts for sale. What are they, 25? We haven't posted them up yet because we just
I kind of put a little note on the front page of the website that they would be coming. And since we just got back, we haven't had time to do really anything for getting things caught up on the website and all the emails and everything. So, we have some shirts that we're going to sell for donation to help us finance the website and offset some of these costs that this obviously incurs.
Yeah. So let's introduce our next guest before she falls asleep listening to us ramble on. Sherry Ann Cortland, originally from New York State, Sherry currently resides in Orlando, Florida, with her husband, Ted, I'm not going to be able to pronounce this, Dailuiski, while working on her BA in communications at Mount St. Mary College. Sherry attended a psychic development class in Monticello, New York. It was during one of these classes that her spirit guide, Jeremy, first made contact through automatic writing. Sherry has been conversing with Jeremy and other spirit guides through automatic writing for more than two decades. Sherry also studied herbology with Rosemary Gladstar and earned a Doctor of
Naturopathy.
Thank you. Degree from Clayton College of Natural Health. Her first book is called Windows of Opportunity, and her new book titled Rising Vibrations for the New Age will be released by Orzac Mountain Publishing in June 2011. Welcome to the show, Sherry.
Hi, Ramon. Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, thank you for joining us. This is just such an honor for us to be able to talk to you.
Yeah.
It's an honor for me.
We both read your first book, Windows of Opportunity, and you did some amazing work there, young lady.
Thank you so much.
So just what brought you to the point where you decided to write a book? What prompted you on your path to turn into this genre?
When did you not mind being considered a crazy person?
These are such great questions. And before I answer them, I just have to say, Ramon, that my husband doesn't even pronounce his last name properly. So you did a great job with that.
Okay. All right. So I don't have to worry about him coming to get me.
No, don't worry. He doesn't even pronounce it properly. It's a joke in our family that he does that. Okay. When did I first get started? When did I not want to be considered a weirdo or not care about it anymore? Such great questions. I wrote that book, Tom and Ramon, Kicking and Screaming. I did not want to write that book. When my guide, Jeremy, first said it's time to write a book, I laughed out loud and thought he was off of his rocker because, first of all, who the heck was I to write a book? And secondly, I was very happy tucked away in my little closet. I did not want to come out. I did not want to talk about these things. But I learned very quickly that you cannot really win an argument with spirit, and you just can't. And they just kept at it and until I gave in. Although I will tell you this, after they dictated everything and I organized it into book form, I left it sitting in my desk drawer for a good year before I sent it out to any publishers. And when I sent it out to publishers, I sent it out to six publishers, and Ozark Mountain picked it up. I thought that I was just humoring them when I did that because I never thought that someone was going to publish it. I thought I was going to be safe in my closet.
Little did you know.
Little did I know.
Was there some event in your life that turned you towards consciousness and spirituality?
I think before we get into that, I think we should explain exactly what automatic writing is and how is it that people won't be like, oh, no, that's just her alter ego.
Oh, that's a very good point. Very good point. Well, you know, when it comes to automatic writing, it was back in the 80s when I first learned about automatic writing, and I was reading a lot of books by Ruth Montgomery. And she, I believe, was like a press secretary, something like that, something with the press attached, I think, to Richard Nixon. And she wrote all of these books where her spirit guide was giving her information through them, and she wrote about all kinds of things, predictions and stuff about aliens among us, all kinds of really different interesting things. And I remember thinking, well, Ruth Montgomery, if she came out of the closet like this and she's writing these books and she already has a name and she's successful, she has everything to lose by publishing these books and really nothing to gain. There has to be something to this. And I felt the same way about Shirley MacLaine, you know, and I mean, they made so much fun of her on late night TV, but she really didn't have to write those books. She had all the money in the world, successful actress, and who knows what else she did. But to write those books and come out of the closet that way was just so, so brave. And I thought to myself when I was reading Ruth Montgomery books, there was just a point where I had read so much and I thought, I really want to experience, just like you guys want to go on the road now, you know, you don't want to be armchair researchers. I so get that. I wanted to make direct contact. And I think that I was so driven to make that direct contact because there were books that were waiting to be written. But of course, I didn't know that back then. And it's a good thing because I probably never would have started the automatic writing. But automatic writing is just a way to contact. It's just one of the ways to make contacts with your spirit guides and other entities who are on the other side, and even angels. Some people talk with Michael or Raphael and different angels. It's a very safe thing to do. And how do I know that I'm not talking to my alter ego? Well, because I just don't think that I would come out and talk about these things just to promote myself. I really didn't want to come out of the closet, and I really asked so many different questions of the different guides, and until I was really safe and secure that I wasn't crazy, I didn't come out and I didn't talk about these things. But I think that if you do question yourself and think you're crazy, that means you're not.
Yeah, I can tell you really put yourself on the line reading the book. I guess we should jump into Tom's question. Sorry, Tom, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no problem, Ramon. That was a good one to bring up first. So anyway, so
I hope you don't make me sleep in the backyard now.
That last 15 miles to the airport tomorrow that you have to walk might be a little rough for you. But no. So Sherry, was there an event in your life that prompted you to start asking questions?
No, there was no specific event, just that I've always been on a search for the truth. My mother had so many different books, Hans Holzer's Born Again, books about ESP, palmistry, tarot cards, all kinds of things about life after death sitting on her library shelf. And I was reading those from a very young age. And oh, you know, now that I think about it, there is something that might have started me on this path. You know, I was sitting in church one day. I started to go to church with my first husband's family. And I remember them talking about the fact that if you were Catholic and you had like statues of Mary, or you wore a cross that had Jesus Christ on it, that was considered idolatry and you were going to go to hell.
I remember that.
I remember going, yeah, that's crazy, right? Because my whole family is Catholic. This happened to be a Baptist church. And I remember going and talking with that pastor afterwards, and he was just so sure of it. And that was the first thing. And then there was another sermon that he did. And I'm not knocking religion here. I'm just saying that, you know, sometimes you have to question these things. Where he said that that Satan planted the dinosaur bones, that there was no such thing as evolution. And what do you picture in your head? You know, like Satan, like Johnny Appleseed, just throwing dinosaur bones all over for us to find years and years later. It just didn't make any sense to me. And so I guess if there was any real turning point where I started to diverge from religious practices more to spiritual practices, I think that was the timing. That was in the 80s.
Yeah.
I want to dive right into relationships, and being that you wrote it in the book, I'm guessing you don't mind this being out there. If there's a part in your book where you you talk about gaining your power back, and there's so many men and women in relationships where I'm like, just get out.
Yes, you know? This story will touch a lot of people. I've seen and I've gone through something very similar. I'm sure. Would you explain that whole relationship villain thing?
Frenemy.
Oh yeah, I'd be happy to. You know, I'm sure that we've all had many, many relationship villains in our lives. First, I have to just do a little background here. When we're on the other side and we're planning our next incarnation, we decide at that point what karmic lessons we want to learn, things we need to pay back, what kind of growth experiences we want to have. So the things that happen to us in our lives are very much things that we've wanted to happen so that we could grow spiritually, so that we can expedite our spiritual growth. And there are two things that the guides who helped me write, or really who wrote Windows of Opportunity, talk about to help us expedite our spiritual growth. The first is relationship villains, and the second is Windows of Opportunity. And the relationship villains concept is that the entities here who especially in our relationships, our romantic relationships, relationships with friends, coworkers, that kind of thing, that are troubled, a lot of times we don't like these people, or we're living the same things over and over again, but these entities who cause us trouble, they are really our closest friends, our closest universal friends when we're on the other side of the veil. But for this incarnation, they've kind of put on the black hat. They're playing the role of the bad guy for the specific purpose of helping us to learn a lesson. And it's a very difficult thing to be a relationship villain. I mean, the roles are reversed. We have relationship villains, but we're also relationship villains at some time in our life for other people too. And, you know, sometimes they do things to us or present us with opportunities to learn and grow that we might think are terrible and are difficult and are painful and dramatic. And that's just so that we can learn these lessons, and hopefully we'll eventually wake up and learn them. Do you want me to talk about the big one that popped me open?
Yeah, I'd like to hear that story about your personal relationship villain.
Okay, well, I had many of them, and each one became subsequently more controlling. All the men in my life had that common denominator. In the beginning, slightly controlling. My first husband, little things like you can't buy Wonder Bread, you have to buy the store brand. Just silly little things like that. My second husband, more so controlling. And then there was this guy that I was engaged to very briefly, and that was just a huge, huge thing. He, you know, everything, we started out and he treated me like an absolute princess. I mean, I never had anyone treat me quite that way before. We got engaged, and it was like I went to sleep that night with one person and woke up with somebody else. Can anybody identify with that? Has that ever happened to you? Okay, all right. See, so this is not so unusual a thing, but all of a sudden, I wasn't wearing my makeup properly. The way that I dressed wasn't right. I had to ask for permission to do the smallest little thing. Asking for permission, that cracks me up. I mean, I couldn't even buy a kitchen towel without asking him first, because the repercussions would just be so great. He would start to pick at little things about me. I can't remember one time when he said something about my ankles. I have something apparently called cankles, and did not even realize that until he pointed this out to me. And he was so upset about it, he wanted me to actually have plastic surgery on my ankles. Can you imagine such a thing?
Wow.
And I remember saying, well, you know, you saw my ankles before you asked me to marry you. Why is this bothering you now? But it just went on and on and on. And finally, I just stopped taking the nonsense. And one night he did something that I it's so hard for me to even talk about this. He pushed me up against a wall and he spit in my face. Well, that's when the real Sherry came out. And you know, I pushed him away from me. I ran to the phone. I dialed 911. And that was really just such a huge, huge awakening for me, because I took back my power at that moment, and never again in my life will I ever experience anything like that. But the moral of the story, though, is this. I never communicated with my first husband about the Wonder Bread. I never communicated with my second husband about his little control issues. And I certainly never communicated with this guy about the things that bothered me. So that was one of the big life lessons that I needed to learn this time around. Unfortunately for me, it took throwing me up against a wall and spitting in my face for me to remember that I had vocal cords.
Your guides also said that if you didn't learn your lesson then, they had someone set up for you.
Oh yes.
I can't even imagine getting worse than that.
I can't even imagine that I had that relationship that I had where I would let myself get thrown up against a wall. That's amazing to me. But my guides did say to me that had I not learned the lesson at that point, that there was definitely another relationship that I had set up for myself that was going to be much, much worse. So I'm very grateful that I learned that lesson then and there. I wish I had learned it earlier.
I have a funny story about, when was that? Maybe 6-7 years ago, I was dating this girl, and she's from Japan. And she asked me for permission to go to the bathroom. And I always found this very ridiculous, but it's very common in the culture to ask permission. And I'm not making fun of the culture. But I said no to her. And she stood there, and she asked me 5 minutes later, can she go to the bathroom? I said no. And I was trying to force her to do the same thing, you know. And then she's shaking there, and I said, go to the bathroom quick. And she ran to the bathroom. And that's when I knew that this relationship couldn't continue. My wife now, she asked me for permission to go to the bathroom, and I said no, and she got up and went anyway. I said, why do you even bother asking me? Just go. Mind you, I'm in her house. So my wife never asked me to go to the bathroom now.
She'll
just get up and go. And then, you know, that's when I knew, okay, this is the right person. Because she wasn't going to sit there. She got up and went.
She's going to take her power. She's going to go when she has to go.
Yeah. So, it's little things like that in society that I find sometimes that make you feel like, okay, this is the way a woman should be, or this is the way a man should be. Were you going to say?
So I've noticed in a lot of the life lessons that I've experienced, and even this experience that you related here, that we build our spirit or our design or the plan builds in a great amount of redundancy to ensure that we will learn our lessons eventually.
Oh, Tom, you are so right about that. And what Jeremy and the other guides who got together to write Windows of Opportunity say is that what a window of opportunity is it's an opportunity for us to learn a lesson, go through that metaphoric window, and then we can work on other things on our spiritual to-do list and therefore expedite our spiritual growth. And what they say that what we call a life script, you know how sometimes we continually attract the same kind of man or woman, which certainly happened to me? That kind of thing is like a life script. And the reason why we do that is because there's something there that we really want to learn, but we just haven't done it yet. So we create these windows of opportunity, and we create many windows of opportunity to learn the same lesson. And according to Jeremy, and I can attest to this, they get more difficult and more drama filled as we miss one and we go on to the next one. And my guide groups like to say that it's so much better for us to learn the lesson on the ground floor rather than in the penthouse. We'll save ourselves so much aggravation, so much drama, and so much pain that way. So learning to spot windows of opportunity is one of the reasons why that first book was written.
There's where I grew up, there was a woman, and she had these different boyfriends, and they always beat her. So she was one of these women that always said, oh, all men are bad and all men are horrible. So she stops dating men and she starts dating a woman. And of course, the same thing started happening again. And I just would think it's like, okay, and this goes out for women and men who are always saying all men are bad or all women are bad. It's like you're not paying attention. It's not them, it's you. You keep attracting the same vibration.
For a reason. You're attracting that same energy, that same vibration for a reason. And then when you suddenly wake up and you realize, oh my gosh, this is something that has happened to me X number of times, obviously I need to change my behavior. I mean, that's what has to happen. Ramon, you're so right. It's us who have to change our behavior so that we stop attracting the same thing. And one of the most wonderful things that happened after I finally woke up and took back my power and learned how to communicate is that very quickly I met my present husband and my last husband, because there's no need to go any further. And I have a wonderful relationship. And I'm not going to tell you that it's all peaches and cream, because it's not. We argue. But that's something that's new for me, because I never argued before. I just kept my mouth shut until everything just blew up and blew to pieces. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
I'm still learning experience.
So, I mean, with me, the lesson that I learned was that I always felt like I had to prove myself. And in my last relationship, it was one obstacle after another of constantly proving myself to this person. And finally, I cut it off. And now with my wife, I never have to prove anything. There's nothing to prove.
So at some point, you figured out that you had a life script and you changed your behavior.
Yeah. Because as a kid, I was always the kid who, you know, something happened, you blame Ramon. I mean, I got blamed for stuff that was just like, I'll give you a quick example. There was this guy, and he was a famous graffiti artist. And he would put graffiti all over people's trucks and people's homes and things like that. And he was well known in the graffiti area. And finally, the store owner comes to my parents and tell my parents. And my older brother was like, oh, you sure you didn't do it? And I was like, let me ask you a question. I said, they're saying that I'm so-and-so. I don't want to say the person's name. And I said, you know him. And he goes, oh, yeah, because everybody knows my handwriting. I have a horrible handwriting. So he was like, no, his stuff is too beautiful. That's definitely not you. So that's what saved me from that point. But the point was that everybody was consistently blaming me for everything. So that's my little lesson.
At what point did you stop that? At some point, that had to stop for you, right? That doesn't happen anymore?
With my last relationship that I was engaged to her, where I consistently was trying to prove to her and her parents that I was a good enough person. Mm. You know? It was starting with this. Let's talk about bullies.
Ah, okay.
The frenemies.
Yes. All right. Well, that's what relationship villains really are. They're like frenemies, like that whole Paris Hilton, and I can't remember the name of the other girl that she was friends with and then not friends with. You know, friends in private and then not friends in public. It makes for good publicity kind of thing. That's what a relationship villain is. And a relationship villain is just somebody who's going to open up a window of opportunity for you, or push you back on the right path. And I've had things happen. I have a frenemy. I'm going to call her Jane. And when I was taking herbology classes and studying for my degree in naturopathy, all of a sudden at work, people were looking at me funny and just like really started to avoid me. And finally, I cornered one girl and I said, what's going on here? And she said, well, you know, you're into voodoo and you're into witchcraft and you're sacrificing animals. And I was horrified. I'm a vegetarian. I'm an animal rights activist. Nothing could be further from the truth. And I said, well, you know, where are you getting this from? Oh, well, Jane told us. well, Jane was one of my best friends, and I just couldn't imagine, you know, why she was doing this. And bottom line is that I ended up losing two promotions at work because of the things that she was saying. And she was very mad at me. Jane was very mad at me because I was leaving my then husband, and her husband, my husband at the time, the four of us, we were very, very close. And I guess she just didn't want to break that up. And she was doing everything that she could to get me to stay with my husband. Now, in retrospect, I have to say this. My guides have told me that had I stayed with my husband, I could have worked out these issues that I had and learned my lesson in a much gentler, that big lesson that I learned in a much gentler way. I did not have to be pushed up against a wall and spit on to learn that lesson, but I chose to move on, right? So as a relationship villain for me, she was trying to really keep me on the easier path. And then with regard to the promotions, what's very interesting about that is I did lose those two promotions, but there was really no place to go from those promotions. I ended up getting a much better promotion about a year or so down the line and ended up becoming director of specialty sales for my resort. And I never would have been able to go that high up had I got either one of those other promotions. So while I very much was unhappy with Jane at the time, at this point, now understanding more about relationship villains and these things from my guides, you know, I want to give her the Spiritual Academy Award because she did such a great job.
Isn't it amazing the way the synchronistic world works mysteriously like that?
It's just amazing. Well, look at that butterfly that popped in on you guys, right?
Right.
I mean, that's a message. That's synchronicity.
Yeah, that was a very clear-cut message. We just sat there for 5 minutes. Yeah. And so I wanted to go into certain things that happen in our life, like accidents and people getting sick and deaths. That, you know, not only affect that person, but affect everybody around them. What do your guides say about that?
Well, the guides say that accidents are just huge, huge windows of opportunity. They create windows for learning and growth, not just for one person, but for many, many people, because one single accident, I mean, let's just talk fender benders here, but I mean, one fender bender accident, think how many lives are touched. You've got the person who causes the accident, who we'll call the relationship villain for this. They get the whole thing going. And then, you know, if you need medicines, you're going to be talking to people in the pharmacy, you go to the doctor, families on both sides, friends on both sides, co-workers. There are so many lives that are touched just from one single fender bender that gives so many different people an opportunity to react a given way and learn a lesson or deal with karma. Accidents are huge, huge things from a karmic standpoint.
It's almost like the web gets shaken.
Yes, yes, exactly like that. Because we're all connected. We're all connected.
Hmm. How about, you know, so most people would think like, okay, so accidents, but on a more severe note, for example, serial killers or murders of passion, what is it that, is that also a window of opportunity or is that something else?
You know, my guides tell me that when we're on the other side and we're planning our lives, we do not sit there and plan to murder someone or plan to be murdered. That's something that they say comes from sort of like a short circuit in our brains. A lot of times things happen when, talk about a serial killer, when they're very young, perhaps they're very, very much mistreated by their family, their father, their mother, someone. Something happens that snaps something in their brain. A synapse just doesn't fire correctly. You know, the battery just isn't working right. And a lot of times, you know, with a serial killer, they start off with animals, that kind of thing. And there are opportunities for people to see that something's wrong and to take action long before they get to the killing of human beings stage.
So, So let me, excuse me for breaking in here. So would you say that what is happening there for that, say, the perpetrator, the one that would be turning into this monster, would you say that something that happens in their life to trigger that would be like an irretrievable life path or life plan for that person? Something happened to totally turn all the circumstances completely out of line with him being able to gain whatever it was they were supposed to gain in this life. Did I articulate that enough? You understand?
I think you're absolutely right, Tom. I think you have a great understanding of this. You know, this is a very difficult subject. It's a hard subject to talk about. It's a hard subject to even listen to about because the emotions run so high for this kind of thing. But, you know, when we're planning what we're going to do and what we're going to learn, we have a tendency sometimes to put too much on our plate because we want to make a lot of progress. And so sometimes we put ourselves into situations that we think that we can handle, and then sometimes we just can't, or maybe something changes in the circumstances, and then what happens is just too much for us to bear, and we have that short circuit. And when that happens, it's a terrible thing, because if someone is murdered, then all of the windows of opportunity that person is supposed to be a part of for himself or herself and for others, all the different roles and things that they were going to play for themselves and other people, that's just gone. It's gone. And so then at that point, our higher selves and our guides, they really have to scramble and they have to work out new windows of opportunity. You know, our higher selves are always connected. They're in contact with us, whether we realize it or not. And so they'll get to work and they'll create new windows of opportunity, but it creates a lot of motion, a lot of movement.
It's amazing. So someone, for example, like Adolf Hitler, he was abused as a child and he grew up and he became, you know, lack of a better word, this monster. Where do they put other people to try to stop him? Because then this is the part that confused me. Because you want to stop this monster because of, you know, he's doing some horrific things. So,
Ramon, you know, I hate to sound like, I don't know. Maybe I don't hate to sound this way. But I kind of see there's major events like that where they had major, major impact on the world. I almost see that in particular, that specific event as being something that the world itself had to go through. As callous and horrible as that might sound, I think about all the people who have the silver lining inside that really dark cloud was amazing as far as the way people look at the world now. And I don't know, I don't have this thought completely formulated enough to particularly.
Yeah. The Adolf Hitler thing gets me every time because that's one of the things when the guide groups started to talk about this subject, I'm thinking, oh, come on, you know, this Hitler thing, how can that be okay? And, you know, Tom, I hear what you're saying, and there was so much good that did come out of it. But I don't think that Hitler was expected to get quite as far as he did. There were opportunities to stop him, but, you know, sometimes people didn't step up or things just didn't work out the way that they were, that they could have worked out. Eventually, you know, he was stopped. I mean, it would have been great if he was stopped earlier. And, you know, my thing was always, well, what happens when he crosses over? You know, I mean, is he welcomed with open arms? What happens? And, you know, what the guide group said was that he was very much a damaged soul, and that when he did get back to the other side, he was horrified at what had happened. And they indicated too that he didn't really quite understand everything that was happening, that there were people under him who were doing a lot of what was going on, and he wasn't quite as connected to it as we would think. I'm just repeating what my guide group said. I wasn't there. I don't really know. But they said that they kind of put him into sort of like a a spirit coma for a very long time because he was just so horrified and so devastated by the things that he set in motion.
Right. Maybe what I'm seeing, what I'm sensing and seeing is the silver lining in that dark cloud I'm seeing is the spirit's actions that were taken after the fact to try to rectify the damage and to turn it into something that was, you know, try to lessen the negative impact that it had on the world. So maybe that's the silver lining I'm seeing in that whole scenario.
Yeah, I agree. New windows of opportunity were created, and we recognized them and we acted on them.
Yeah, in that situation, there's 2 points that I was trying to make, and one was let's say, for example, change of history, and let's say one of my past lives, and this is just an example, I have the opportunity. Now, I'm doing this because he killed my family in cold blood, and I have the opportunity to kill him in cold blood. Wouldn't you say that I'm going through the same situation that he went through, where something short circuit, even though I'm doing such a great good by stopping him? Or is it a great good? That's what I'm questioning, because I'm also going through that short circuit.
I know what you mean, because if you kill a serial killer, what does that mean?
Exactly.
What's the greater good? I mean, I haven't had any dictation from the guides on that, but I think that there must be times that you have to stop someone. You have to stop someone like that, and so. Boy, you know, now it sounds like I'm advocating murder, and I'm really not. But I think that if push came to shove and I had the opportunity to stop Adolf Hitler, I would have fired that gun.
Yeah, I think almost every person on the planet would have.
Yeah, and then dealt with it later. I mean, if I had to deal with karma for it, then I would deal with karma for it. But I absolutely would put the greater good, I think, sometimes has to be at the forefront of our thoughts.
Yeah. I'm coming, and we'll get off the topic, but what book was it? It was The Key by...
Strieber.
Yeah, Whitley Strieber, where they talk about that our society should have been more advanced, but because of the Adolf Hitler type, he had murdered parents that would give birth to these kids that would have developed all this technology, and you know, our society would have been more advanced.
Oh, I so agree. We could already perhaps be, you know, at the fifth dimensional level if that hadn't happened. I absolutely agree with that. What book was that by Whitley Strieber?
The Key.
The Key? I have not read that. I have to write that down.
Yeah,
I read all of his books, but I didn't read that one.
How long ago did he come out with that book, Tom? Do you know?
Oh, Whitley Strieber's The Key was, in the 80s sometime, wasn't it?
Wasn't it? No, it happened to him in the 80s, but I think
I've got it here somewhere.
I'll start pushing all your books around to look.
I've got all of his books here about when he was taken, but I didn't realize that he had written that one.
Yeah, this one was more someone like walked into his hotel one day and started telling him all these things. But if you listen to the interview with William Henry, it's an amazing... No, wait.
2001.
No, with... not William Henry, with George Knapp on Coast to Coast.
2001, Ramon. I got the book in my hand.
Okay, yeah. I know he waited like a long time before putting it out.
Oh, I can't wait to read that. I'm glad you brought that up.
Oh, it's a good one. It's a good one.
Yeah, it's a really good one. It makes you question many things many times.
So, let's see. Have we taken that as far as we want to go there with the relationship villains and that aspect? I kind of like to get into... I really like the way you describe the guide group. I think every one of us has that capability, and if not a full group, I think we have access to creating that full group.
Oh, I absolutely agree. You know, when I started to do automatic writing, and I had just gotten to a point where I really wanted the direct contact with my guides. I had read so many books. I had done so many, seen so many workshops. I just wanted that direct contact, and that's what really got me going. And then Jeremy was the first guide to come through, and he's my main guide for this incarnation. And when it came time to write Windows of Opportunity, it was Jeremy, another guy named Alexio Porath, who had done some writing with me back in the 80s, late 80s. And then, this is very interesting, I think, they brought in some of my family members who are currently on the other side of the
veil.
Veil, thank you. I'm just now thinking about my grandmother here. I think that they did this because they wanted to keep me in line, and they knew that I did not want to write this book. So they made my grandmother the spokes guide for this guide opportunity, because they know no matter what side of the veil she's on, I am going to obey my grandmother.
There you go.
So, yep, there you go. So no that matter. And one of my aunts and a cousin of mine also, and then some other guides, they came together for this book.
Yeah, wow, that's quite amazing.
And then for the second book, it was a whole different guide group. I had a new guide named Gilbert and his group that dictated much of the information for raising our vibrations for the new age. And when I thought I was basically finished and I was about to start to organize all of that information from them, I was meditating outside in my front yard, actually. And I had a new guide come in, Aknanda, and this is going to blow your mind a little bit, of Aknanda and the Arcturians, so a little galactic influence now. And he popped in and had some information to give me for the new book. So I actually had two new guide groups for the brand new book that just came out, and then my family keeping me in line for the first one.
Yeah, I want to kind of save the stuff for the second book for the second hour.
Okay.
I would like to go into your contact with the people outside of this planet, the non-terrestrials. How I was reading it in the book.
Oh, okay. You really want me out of that closet on the show?
Oh yeah, fully.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, let's see. I mean, there has never been a doubt in my mind that there are folks here from other planets. I've never liked the whole abduction scenario. You know, my guide groups tell me that no one was abducted that didn't agree to it. But, you know, that's something that we agreed to when we were on the other side. Of course, when we get here, you know, we forget all of those agreements that we made. And I can't think of anything more scary, really, than to be abducted. But there's just never really been a doubt in my mind about that. But when I was a very little girl, like 5 years old, 4 years old, 5 years old, I had mice friends, my mice friends who lived under the bed. And my guide group informed me that really what was going on was that I had a change of heart and did not want to stay here. I wanted to go home very, very badly. And
can't
so, yeah, right? Thank you. Thank you for that.
Like, no, this is not why I signed up.
Take me home. Beam me up, Scotty. And so anyway, the ETs were coming to visit me and kind of give me some galactic therapy here to help me get through this. I guess some things had kind of changed for me in the circumstances I thought I was going to have growing up. Just weren't really gonna be there for me, and I just wasn't wanting to be there and truly wanted to go. And anyway, they said that I couldn't go because the timeline, you were talking timeline earlier also, right, about where we might be if it wasn't for the Hitler thing.
Right.
The timeline, yeah, for the things that I needed to do, it was going to be hard for me to get back in body and to find the right situation and to be on the right timeline. So I really kind of had to stick it through. Although when I was little, I understand that I had pneumonia and I was constantly getting sick and doing everything that I could to get the heck out of here.
You had your thumb out there, huh? Looking for a hitch.
I did. Pick me up. I'm going home.
Hmm. Wow.
So much for the mice, right?
So have you had any other, any more experiences? Did you have any other experiences before you started communicating with your guide group?
I have not had any. You know, I mean, I've gone to different UFO conferences, and I read every book that I can find about it. But I have not had any experiences at all. Now I'm very open to it, and I wish one would land in my front yard or my backyard, because again, I try and jump on there.
Get me out of here.
Listen. I now understand why I have these Counselor Troy fantasies, right? That's what I want to do. Get back on that spaceship and go wherever. But no, I haven't had anything. Now, I know you want to talk about the new book in the second hour, but my sister, after she read the first book, she told me about her own experience that was kind of going on at the same time that I had the mice. And she was seeing what she called the pink monster in black boots. So I made in my mind, they looked like mice. To her, it was a furry monster, pink, all pink, you know, fur, and in these black boots. And
so very cutesy.
Yeah, the differences between us, right? And so she had her experiences with that, where she would just suddenly find herself outside in our backyard. And believe me, there is no way in Spark Hill, New York, that we would go past this great big huge tree. It was a very scary tree in the dark. And it was like weeping willow. And then there was a woods behind our house. And she said several times she found herself out there in the middle of the night. So she was having her own thing going on at the same time that I was having my own thing going on. So kind of interesting there. Wow. They say sometimes it goes in families like that, but we're thinking we need to go and get some therapy and some hypnotherapy to find out exactly what was going on.
So before we get out of this first hour, I kind of like to hit on one more thing. You talk about how you can help to instigate and to promote these life changes that you did sign up for, how to activate them in your life and actively pursue them. How do you do that? How do you bring those things to the forefront and say, okay, if I signed up for, to learn this lesson, I'm aware and I want to do it. Let's get going, guys.
It's hard work, Tom. It is nothing but hard work, and it's painful too, because you've got to be very honest about yourself. You've got to take a good hard look at your life. You have to look for patterns, because these patterns will help you identify your life scripts. And the life scripts are just a series of windows of opportunity where you did not learn the lesson. So step number one is to do a review of your life. Do a life review. Be very honest. Look for those patterns, and then look at the way that you handled these things when they come up. You have to change your behavior, because something that you were doing wasn't right. Otherwise, you wouldn't be having the same experience over and over again. And the only way to know that you have gone through a window is that you're not having the same type of thing go on in your life anymore. Then you know that you've succeeded. But it's very difficult sometimes, I think, to sit and take a look at your life and say, okay, you know, when I'm presented with X situation, this is how I deal with it. Maybe you're angry, maybe you're judgmental, you know, and that's something that you have to change. And then you've got to set about to the hard work of making those changes in your life. And, you know, it takes a lot to create new habits. It's a difficult thing to do. But if you're aware and you spend the time on it, you can make those changes.
So with that being said, how much time we have left, Tom?
Well, I think we need to see where people can pick up her material at, and your website, Sherry.
Oh, thank you. Okay, well, the books are available at Barnes & Noble stores, Barnes & Noble online, Amazon.com, OzarkMountain.com, and also if you want an autographed copy, you can go to my website, www.sherrycortland.com.
Great. And I did notice on your website that was the Awakening to Higher Consciousness Transformation Conference your first speaking engagement like that?
No. Actually, the Awakening to Higher Consciousness conference, which was just a couple weeks ago, that was my third time speaking at their transformation conferences. I also do a lot of workshops around Florida.
Right. Yeah, you've got some, if you go to her website and click on the workshops and book signings tab, it will take you to a page that shows quite a bit of information there and a lot of contact stuff where you can get hold of her and all the different places that she does these different workshops at. So check it out.
And in both books, there are instructions on how to do automatic writing. And if anyone in your audience wants to email me, I will be happy to send them instructions on how to do automatic writing and also stay in touch with me and I will help you through. The biggest thing is to be consistent and to have patience because it may not happen right away.
Yeah. With that being said, Tom, your little famous quote?
Condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance.
And I want to give a huge thank you to the eSETI family, to James, Pam, Jenna, Nate, and also to the speakers, Michael Tellinger, Mel Farragas, Jenny Lamb,
Brooks Agnew,
of course.
Neil Kramer,
and am I forgetting anybody else?
Probably. Who are you forgetting? You are forgetting someone. Who are we forgetting?
Oh, Bob Dean.
Oh, how could we forget? We gave Bob Dean a ride to the airport, too, yesterday. That was a pretty good drive.
And lots of thank you to all the listeners and everybody who showed up to the conference. And make sure you tune in to Brooks Agnew. He's coming on next. And then you can come back to the archive.
Right. Okay, guys, we'll see you in the archive.
Yay!